Stay with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sulis. Interested in learning new skills online at a pace that suits you? Visit ecollege.ie to apply for one of our free online courses.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
And it's time for the Friday gathering now to discuss the news of the week. And I'm joined in the studio by Fianna Fáil TD for Meath East and Minister of State for European Affairs Thomas Byrne, People Before Profit TD for Dublin South Central Breed Smith, the Irish Examiner Deputy Political Editor Elaine Loughlin, and Media Consultant Tom McEnany. I just want to come back to that news that we brought you before the break about the ruling in the Supreme Court in relation to the Green Party TD Patrick Costello and his challenge to Ireland's proposed ratification of the CETA deal. And Elaine, you're going to explain this to us. So what's happened?
Yes, and this is obviously an important trade deal between the European Union and Canada. And like other trade deals, all European nations have to ratify it. Ireland has yet to ratify it. And then we had this court challenge initially at the High Court last year. Green Party TD Patrick Costello took the court case. It was dismissed at High Court level, so went to the Supreme Court. We were expecting this to happen today, but it's probably slightly surprising that it went in Patrick Costello's way. I don't think perhaps even members of the Green Party were expecting this. So what the Supreme Court has found, a majority of 4-3, is that the Constitution currently precludes the ratification of the deal. And I think maybe currently is probably an important word to stress in this ruling, because they do go on to say, and it was a majority of 6-1, went on to say that if certain amendments are made to legislation, then the deal potentially can go through
and the Oireachtas.
Yes, and can be passed. So it's essentially putting it back onto the Oireachtas, okay, onto some of the TDs here today.
Just so we're clear, Patrick Costello had said that this should be ratified via a referendum of the people.
Yes.
And the Supreme Court has agreed with him on that. But they've suggested that there is a fix, but it's not for them to come up with that. It's up to Thomas Byrne, you and your colleagues in the Oireachtas.
Yeah, and again, look, Claire, I'm a lawyer now. I'd be very reluctant to comment on a Supreme Court decision without actually reading it in front of me. Orla O'Donnell's report is really, really good, really succinct. It tells us what happened. It seems that there is a path that to Oireachtas ratification. And quite frankly, I really strongly support trade, first of all, because Ireland and our workers benefit strongly from trade. Mm-hmm. This is a trade agreement with Canada. I think one of the biggest problems was making this so mysterious by calling it the Comprehensive Economic Trade Agreement. I think, why did we just not call it the EU-Canada Trade Agreement? Who would be against that? There were issues on the investor courts that Patrick Costello had problems with. I think that complicated the issue too much. I think maybe some trade boffins were thought, and this is a very efficient way of doing it, but there wasn't enough consideration given at the EU level to how does this react, and what's the reaction in national parliaments. We're not the only country that has slowed on ratification. Mm-hmm. It has happened in other countries too. But I sincerely hope that it does get ratified. I should say, though, that the benefits of the trade agreement are already in place on an administrative basis,
yeah,
I think, for the most part.
People will remember.
We don't have customs duties with
Canada. When Patrick Costello took this case initially in the High Court, there was anger within the coalition that he did that, because he was a government TD and he wasn't playing ball with this, and he decided to go off and challenge it in the courts. And he was right.
I didn't agree with him at the time, but I mean, every citizen has a right to go to the courts. And he's right in the extent that the Supreme Court has said as things currently stand. Mm-hmm. But the Supreme Court has said, it seems to have said, and again, we haven't read the decision, that a change to Irish law and the Arbitration Act, it seems, would rectify the situation. The Supreme Court agreed with that by 6-1. So if that's the way that we should ratify this trade agreement that gives certainty to our businesses, that protects jobs, that's what trade with Canada is all about. This isn't some kind of secret plan, as some people have described it, to sort of take away rights from people or to take away public services like healthcare, education. This is simply about ensuring that we have a level playing field between the EU and Canada, and our companies and our workers can benefit from this. So I'm all in favour of it. But again, haven't read the judgment. Okay. I'm not the Minister for Enterprise, the Minister for Trade, so the government will have to obviously have a considered response to this.
Breed Smith?
Well, I congratulate Patrick. I think it's a great result, and fair play to him for doing it, because the spirit of what the Supreme Court is saying is that he was correct. And it still should be the decision of the Irish people by referendum, rather than some messing around with laws or tweaking laws by the main parties in the Oireachtas. And I would argue that the Green Party, being part of the coalition, should insist that that doesn't happen, that in fact there is a referendum rather than a tweaking of the legislation. Because despite the sort of feel-good, optimistic view of my colleague here beside me, there is a mechanism inside the CETA arrangement that would, for example, if we were to bring in laws to bring down rents or to control rents, could be challenged by many of the Canadian REITs companies and vulture funds that are here running our housing industry.
If you're going to start making that contention, you're going to have to quote the provision of the CETA that actually provides for that breach, because it does not
provide
for
that. There are laws contained there that could challenge us, for example, trying to nationalise the energy sector, which is something we want to see, because we believe that nationalising the energy sector can deal with both the cost of living crisis and the energy crisis.
Thomas Brown Patrick Costello could be challenged in his concerns around introducing legislation, and his particular concerns centred around the environment. So clearly there are concerns there.
Breed Smith has raised the issue of renters, she's raised the issue of energy, all these red herrings. Patrick Costello, his concerns. I haven't read the judgment. I suspect it has something to do with the issue of the investor courts, which I know that Patrick Costello had an issue with because it mentions the Arbitration Act. But I don't know because I haven't read the judgment. But I can absolutely guarantee you it has nothing to do with what Breed Smith has said in terms of forcing people to pay higher rents.
Are you in favour of a tweak of legislation or holding a referendum now?
It's I don't think it's appropriate for government ministers to come on without having seen a judgment and make a comment on behalf of the entire government on this issue. I think the government will have to look very carefully at the judgment.
My instincts are correct,
that we should support trade, we should do whatever we can to increase trade because our economy benefits to a huge degree from trade with other countries. That's why we've been so successful in our economy over the last number of decades.
It's very early, but it does look like it's a very victory. If the Green Party could insist on having a referendum irrespective of what the Supreme Court was going to say, then Patrick would have already gone down that route, so that's not going to happen. His concerns were based around environmental regulation. We're not going to see changes to that regulation. We're going to see tweaks to existing legislation, and then it looks like the CETA will go ahead.
Patrick also had concerns about the investor courts and how it could interfere with decisions that we might make as a state.
And it's unlikely that we're going to see any major changes to those investor courts, at least based on what we know now, given that the Supreme Court is ruled by a majority of 6-1, all we need is certain amendments.
I think that one is going to play out, but I just want to move on to some other stories that have been making the headline this week. And we've been talking about the coalition tensions in the last couple of moments, but we also want to talk about voting PACs. Thomas Byrne, Leo Varadkar coming out during the week saying you should go into the next election together, transfers, voting deal, and members in your own party very upset about that?
Well, I'm not upset, but I was kind of upset in a way because I thought, have I missed something? Is there an election coming up? Like, you know, and as far as I can tell, there's no election coming up. So I haven't missed anything. The people haven't missed anything. I think what Fianna Fáil is absolutely focused on is making sure that we're delivering for people in accordance with what we committed to at the last election when the government was formed.
He's factually right, though, that you missed out on a few seats by not transferring to each other.
Well, sorry, Fianna Fáil didn't get enough transfers from lots of sides of the political divide, so we want to get even more transfers the next time. And the way you do that is by actually delivering on what you said you're going to do, which is in relation to housing. Cost of living is obviously a big crisis at the moment, and healthcare, they're the big issues, along with everything else, plus making sure that we have a business-friendly environment, which includes trade agreements such as CETA, to make sure that we've jobs for people there. I think people will judge us in the next election, but by God, there's a lot of work to do between now and then.
And how would you feel about asking your constituents to vote number two for Helen McEntee, wouldn't it be?
Helen McEntee's a very fine politician, but I'd be asking my constituents to support me, but I won't be doing it until I've actually said to them, well, this is what we've done. We said we'd do this in the last election. We're now in the middle of working through all that. We've brought housing up from record lows to record highs, actually, in terms of delivery of housing, and we have to continue with that.
Don't mention housing this week, because we're going to be talking about that in a minute.
But I know, but it's the entire focus of the government and not an election.
All right. And Breed, what do you think about this suggestion from Leo Varadkar that they go out together?
Well, I'd have no problem with it. In fact, I think it's a good idea, because there's very little between them in terms of their policies. I think Fianna Fáil think they suffer from an identity crisis and are trying to hang on to their identity, but in reality, when you're sitting at the tallies, in the last election in particular, it was very clear that people vote either left or right, and transfers from left to left. Like, I got a lot of transfers from Sinn Féin, others got transfers from me, others on the left. And similarly, when we were watching the tallies in areas where it was close, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael transfer to each other. People are more sophisticated now. It's not just the traditional civil war politics. They think in terms of left and right, and they will vote for each other. Fianna Fáil number one, Fine Gael number two, or vice versa. Because I've seen that play out in many of the constituencies in the last election.
It was interesting, Tom, that this suggestion came from Fine Gael. I mean, do you think it's an attempt to squeeze Fianna Fáil out of the picture so it becomes Fine Gael versus Sinn Féin?
I think it's a very well considered flying of a kite by Fine Gael. I think it's probably quite clever. I couldn't disagree more with Breeds in terms of left versus right. I don't know. I know very few people who think in those terms. I think most people and most voters don't think in terms of left or right. Most are like myself. They're left on some issues and probably a little bit to the right on other issues. I think we have too much of a focus sometimes, especially by politicians, on ideology, which is something that a lot of voters don't care about. They're more concerned about effectiveness. And in fairness to the government, whatever your ideology, we don't live in a one-party government, as say they have in the US. It's not about whether you vote for this party or that party. Effectively, it's how you're going to allow the next government to be composed. And that's inevitably in Irish politics, a coalition. And it's the difference between coalitions that work and coalitions that don't work. And in fairness to this coalition, whatever your politics, this coalition has worked. We're looking at a handover of power now, if you like, or a transfer of power between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. And it looks to be going quite smoothly, despite predictions that there would be, there'd be major problems.
5 weeks to go. Like, I think you really are jumping the gun there. Let's see what happens in the next couple of weeks. Thomas Byrne is giving me a smile that doesn't tell me anything about what's going to happen. Are you expecting to keep your job?
I have no idea. I'll serve at the pleasure of the leader of Fianna Fáil and the Taoiseach of the day.
You'd want to stay in European Affairs.
I'm very happy doing the job I'm doing, but we're all asked to do a job, and you're asked to do a job, you do it.
Elaine, Cara, what's your take on the voting pact suggestion?
Yeah, I would pick up, and I have to acknowledge how level-headed Thomas was in his response, because initially when I spoke to members of Fianna Fáil, firstly it was that jitteriness, they had a bit of the jitters because they were saying, well, why is the other leader in government suddenly talking about an election when we think it's 2.5 years away? But that kind of feeling was quickly replaced by an almost fury, especially amongst Fianna Fáil backbenchers, who were saying that essentially Leo Varadkar has now put them in a position of them having to come out and say, yes, we'll go with this voting pact and we're not even going to entertain a Sinn Féin government next time around, or a possible coalition with Sinn Féin. So it was kind of that very binary decision 2.5 years out. And we do know that Leo Varadkar also has been pushing this narrative of, ahead of a general election, Sinn Féin will be putting themselves up as the alternative to Sinn Féin. So he's really trying to force Fianna Fáil to come along on that narrative with him and become part of that, well, a voting pact. And it's something that Fianna Fáil members were really not happy about this week, that I certainly spoke to.
I saw one Fianna Fáil TD quote in the Irish Times saying Fianna Fáil is too large an organisation to rely on a pact. I mean, that mightn't be true anymore.
I spoke in terms of myself. Just to be absolutely clear, we won't be entering a voting pact, but it doesn't come up anyway because there's no election coming up. But it's very simple. We're focused on the job that we're doing, the work that we're doing, delivery for the people, delivery on housing and health. That's what people want us to focus on.
If there was an election in the morning, would you say?
There won't be an election in the morning. It doesn't come up, but we won't be entering a voting pact. We'd be going out in our own identity, which is what I said
earlier.
So you're not even
going to entertain a conversation about it?
I don't think so, no.
Mm-hmm. Hard for you then to continue to do business with a...
No, it's not.
The
government's working really well together. And in fact, the programme for government is founded on the recognition that all of the parties have their own unique identity, and we're entitled to do that. That doesn't preclude you from working with others. But the next election is a long time away.
Well, it's one thing to work with somebody. It's another
one
if that somebody is coming out and saying, you know what you should do? You should just have a voting pact with us. It's just a very strange thing for a leader of another party to suggest.
You can put that question directly to the Taoiseach, but we work very, very closely
with our
Fine Gael
colleagues. But it must be frustrating. I mean, if I were you, I'd find that frustrating.
Well, you're putting words in my mouth. I said to you very clearly that my initial reaction, what election? What are we talking about?
I know, but it's demeaning for someone to say that about another party, saying, well, we're the big boys, you come along with us, we look after you against the threat of Sinn Féin.
Sorry, he hasn't said that. And in fact, it wouldn't be true because we got more seats than them in the last election. We still have more seats. So look, that's irrelevant.
Cheeky then, okay, not demeaning.
That's irrelevant. Well, again, you're putting words in my mouth. It's absolutely irrelevant. It's also irrelevant to all of our listeners out there who are demanding solutions on housing, on the cost of living, on health.
You can
ask the Taoiseach about that.
I'm not sure if I'd agree with the people who've been suggesting to Elaine that Fianna Fáil politicians are going to find themselves in a difficult binary decision now, because Claire, as you know yourself, I've never met a Fianna Fáil politician who isn't accomplished at avoiding giving a yes or no answer.
I gave a clear answer there, actually.
I'm not just
not
speaking
the only
to
party
you,
you're
Thomas,
good at that.
Although I suspect suspect there will be a lot of your colleagues listening to you this morning trying to take tips on how they're going to answer the same questions over the next week.
I think maybe deep down as well, maybe members of Fine Gael, I'm mixing them up now. I think that kind of proves my point. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael might actually acknowledge that they are very close politically, and as Breed said, you know, voters, when they're looking, might naturally give, if they're giving their number one to Fianna Fáil, might naturally already give it to number two to Fine Gael, mm-hmm. or vice versa, because their policies are very much aligned, and Thomas will probably reject that. But no. It there might be an already natural pact there. So perhaps Leo is just raising what is already happening.
The policy point is true, because you've agreed policy for government.
Policy. They've compromised a lot. We've got housing up from almost nothing to at record levels for the last 15 years. Since the last
they That's had really meetings important. Yesterday to discuss their ideas about housing, you know, how they could improve the housing strategy. Fine Gael have.
They can have whatever meetings they want. We have meetings on housing regularly as well. How do we keep working towards our targets? But the only real policy out there on housing, the only policy, no matter what anyone says, is the housing fraud plan.
We're constantly
looking at it. How can we make it better?
Just on the targets, Thomas, we did learn this week that the housing department's own figures in that Housing for All plan are based on really old figures from 2016. And we're going to need now 60,000 extra houses on top of those targets by 2030.
Yeah, I think the Taoiseach has more or less said that. He said that he wants the targets to be increased. So this year we're going to exceed our targets. And that's really...
Your incorrect targets, you're going to exceed them.
Well, their targets were laid down. A lot of them were laid down in terms of development plans that were there before.
Can you spell that out for us? How are you going to exceed your targets, please?
I'll give you the exact figures.
Because I've got different statistics.
The target this year was 24,600, and we are going to exceed that, is my understanding.
24,600 houses built, completed.
Yes, and we're going to exceed that.
By how much?
To exceed that this year. I don't have the exact figure on that. We are going to exceed
it. I've got completely different statistics.
But also, what I would say is that, yes, we want to achieve even more than that. So we do need to, and the Taoiseach has said this on a number of occasions, this isn't new, that we actually need to be building more because of our population increase, because of the, you know, there's been an inward flow of migration into the country as well. That's really important. Our economy is going really well. There's a lot of jobs. We need more houses.
Okay.
But we're building more than we expected, and we expect to increase those targets as well, and that's very important
to us. And on these figures, we were told this week that the targets are incorrect. We were also told by government that we're going to have a review anyway, and it'll all be fixed by then, Breed.
Honest to God, it is so depressing. I mean, when you think back from Alan Kelly to Simon Coveney to Owen, what's his name, from
Murphy.
This constituency, and now Dara O'Brien, and nothing changes. It only gets worse. We have more children in emergency accommodation now than ever before.
And we do have an influx of Ukrainian refugees, which couldn't have been predicted this time last year.
That's since February. The housing crisis has, that's why I'm going back on the history. The housing crisis has been around a long, long time for governments and has got worse and worse. I had a young woman, 15 years on the housing list, at a public meeting about the cost of living, who put it beautifully. Somebody got up and was complaining about the Ukrainian refugees, and she said, no Ukrainian has me 15 years on the housing
that's
list. Right. I'm 14 years on it before they
are. Anyway, I agree with that.
And this is absolutely the case. So what we have here, the figures I have here, is that for this year, the promised 9,000 social houses that you actually said you deliver, up to October, which is just a couple of weeks ago, you delivered 1,765.
I know, that's
and of the 4,100 affordable and cost rental homes, you delivered 373. This is not exceeding your targets by a long shot.
The people are throwing the figures. I mean, there's been a step change. And I'm certainly not blaming the Ukrainian refugees for the housing crisis in Ireland, absolutely. So I don't think they should be brought into the conversation at all, actually.
Well, I think they actually should be, Thomas, because we have 50,000 people now who need housing, and yet the housing minister has washed his hands of those 50,000 people because he's putting it into the hands of Children's Minister Roderick O'Gorman, who's responsible for housing people. And those 50,000 extra people are not being calculated in the figures that we know are now based on 2016 figures, so they're out of date to start off with. This is a housing crisis, and in that, I think the people from Ukraine who have come here and are seeking accommodation and are in need of accommodation should be calculated, because they need a house just as much as your constituents who's waiting on housing.
Tom, you wanted to say something.
I think there are a couple of issues there, and I speak as somebody who works every day with Ukrainian refugees, and the first is most Ukrainian refugees are either going into hotels or going into halls that have been repurposed around the country or going into pledged accommodation, and none of that is part of any long-term solution for homeless people in Ireland or for people in Ireland who are looking at housing options. So they are really two very different issues. I would say as well, though, that Elaine does have a very strong point in terms of the performance of the two ministers. If you talk to people who are at the coalface, and I do regularly, they'd say that the Department of Children is doing amazing work, and there are people there who are working very hard on this issue. There are less effusive about the enthusiasm of the Department of Housing, and it's the Department of Housing which is specifically responsible for holding the local authorities to account, and the performance of the local authorities when it comes to accommodation for refugees is very much, at best, you could call it a mixed bag, and in some parts is appalling and unconscionable.
Just to be absolutely clear on the issue of Ukrainian refugees, there's a whole-of-government approach. We've legal obligations there, we've moral obligations there. I think the entire of Irish society has worked really, really hard. And if there are problems, which there have been, then they need to be addressed. But I think we should acknowledge that as a nation, as a people, we are doing extraordinary work.
I think everybody acknowledges that.
Yeah.
Apart from the few anti-refugee people and a few councillors up in Donegal, we won't mention, but I think largely everybody acknowledges that we're doing a great job.
Just in terms of some of the housing figures, I mean, the number of people buying houses at the moment in this country is, I think, more than double what it was in 2011. The number of housing constructions has gone up.
Nobody was buying houses in 2011.
No, I know they weren't.
That's the worst moment.
But absolutely. But that's the problem, because nothing much happened then in the years after that. And we've absolutely had a massive step changes. So if you look at quarter two of this year, we've 7,654 new dwellings built. That's the highest number of quarterly completions since we started looking at this information in 2011. That's really important. In the first quarter of this year, there was over 1,000 new social homes delivered. And the Taoiseach was very clear, and the Minister, we will deliver on that 9,000 this year. I mean, it won't be all new
this
build
construction.
But it won't be all new build constructions, which is
we've got six weeks left in the first quarter.
We've gone from the third lowest level of completions of houses per capita in 2013. We're now the fifth highest in the European Union. So there's been an absolute step change. We're 2 years in government. The Housing for All plan is 1 year old.
Yeah,
and nobody else has put forward a comprehensive plan in the mould of Housing for All that can deal with this crisis that we have here.
We had Senator Mary Fitzpatrick on the programme earlier in the week talking about housing. And she was saying to us, making the point that we're not going to fix it in the next couple of weeks. But everything she said that can be done is being done. And I suppose that's Thomas's point as well, isn't it?
I don't accept that, because if everything was done that could be done was being done, then many of the pieces of legislation that were proposed before the House would not have been ditched by the government, like reducing rents to affordable levels, like opening up the market to allow for a state-run construction company, like further rent controls. People are in a crisis with housing, and it gets worse and worse and worse. And then we find the statistics that sort of mask the idea that we're making improvements. We don't expect things to happen overnight, but this crisis has been going on for...
But it's not just statistics, because some of those...
Under either Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael.
Because some of those same type of people who've been on the list a long time, I met on Monday, where we're opening new houses, and opposition TDs were delighted to come into the photographs, opening new houses in my constituency. And that's happening all around the country. And I'll be reminding people when the Land Development Agency starts actually delivering of all the opposition politicians that voted against it. The schemes, the first home scheme, the Help to Buy, that all the opposition have voted against. We've put through an enormous amount of legislation through the Dáil to enable us to get our housing crisis
Tom
solved.
McNaney.
And by and large opposed by the opposition.
I find myself in a strange position where I'm agreeing in parts with both Thomas and Breed. Yes, the government has made a step change. Yes, Housing for All has done some very good work. But it's not enough, and it's never going to be enough so long as the system as it stands is not capable of delivering what it is we need. One of the biggest problems, I think, and it ties in with the idea of a national construction agency, one of the biggest problems we have is that whatever approach you take, it's reliant on local authorities. It's if you're saying we need a lot more social housing, well, unless you're just going out to housing bodies, it's reliant on local authorities. If every time the government comes up with guidelines, it's the local authorities who implement them. And at the moment, They it's random as to whether individual local authorities will implement.
I have less than a minute left, and Thomas Byrne, while we have you here, I want to ask you about Rishi Sunak, the British Prime Minister, and whether you believe we're entering an era now of real hope around the Brexit, the Northern Ireland Protocol, whether a deal can be done with him.
Look, there's been a step change, I think, in the political atmosphere between politicians on all sides. That's really important. Rishi Sunak has gone to the British-Irish Council. That's so important. No Prime Minister has gone since Gordon Brown. But that has to be matched at the negotiating table on the technical issues to try and bring closure to this whole issue.
Okay. All right, we'll leave it there. Thank you all very much for coming in today. That's all we have time for. Back with you next Monday morning at 10 o'clock.